What's up, everybody? Anthony Frieda here. Welcome back to Badumpiz. Drum roll, please. It sounded more like a fart, and that maybe that's deserving, considering who I'm introducing. But this is the new, I'm going to call him the co-host of Badumpiz. I'm so, so fucking stoked to have him. You all know him. His name is Mr. Paul O'Keefe. What's up, Paul?
Ant, what's happening, brother?
How you doing, man?
Spectacular. I'm doing really good, thanks. I'm warm for the first time in 6 months, so.
Yeah, because, you know, it's April.
Yeah, I'm too warm now. It's
right?
Ridiculous. It's too hot. I'm right. Irish, for God's sakes. I'm doing good. I'm still here, still standing.
That's good, man. It was a little bit of a rough winter, I would say, in Jersey. This year, man, probably the roughest winter I've ever had.
It was like Game of Thrones winter. Like, there was some nights there where I kind of went outside and I was like, am I gonna see Dothraki with flaming whatever they are, right, on my lawn or something like that? It was we got so much snow this year.
Yeah,
it was like, seriously, it was insane. It was definitely that, I would say, the hardest part about living in New Jersey is just the length of the winter, and this one will be that, so. But it's over now. It's good.
But you know what, though, man, this feeling of the world is kind of dead and not alive, kind of thing. And what I mean by that is because we live right near New York City, and you just feel that things are moving. People are living. People are trying to enjoy their life. They're out. You feel that. I know it's weird to say.
Yeah.
You feel that. And since the pandemic, of course, you don't feel that as much. And that's understood for whatever, you know, for whatever reason, that's what it feels like. But the winter took it to a new level of feeling dead. Like, I felt like I'm surrounded by people.
Yeah.
But I'm so far away from them. And sure. I have no access to them.
And it was the weird thing is, it was a really, really good time for a really shitty winter because.
Yeah.
I mean, the only people that were complaining were the skiers. Everyone else was like, I'm glad I don't have to leave my house this winter. Horrendous out there. But
there were days, though. Like, I still have to, like, go into teach.
Right.
You know, and it would have been really nice to have to work from home, to be able to work from home. But it wasn't that bad. It was fine. And I'm sure our listeners totally want to listen to us talk about snow in New Jersey right now.
Right? I mean, it's like, yeah. Well, it's okay. The thing about it is that you're allowed to talk about snow in New Jersey when you're like, you know, when you're coming out of it, you know. And it's kind of weird because it's like there's kind of a metaphorical springtime as well happening right now, which is weird in the world as well, in the U.S. for sure, because we're actually starting to see spring happen, but also spring for people in the US because of the vaccine happening. And I'm seeing more people out and about.
Yep.
More people are texting me saying, hey, I got my shot. I got my second shot. Mm-hmm. And all the rest of it. So it's actual springtime. And then it's like metaphorical springtime, which
That's
is
true.
Good feeling. It's a really good feeling. And you know,
it is.
Playing music is back. I've got gigs next month, actual gigs, live gigs. Yeah.
That's fucking awesome. That's great to hear.
Yeah. Can we?
You know, we talked about it on your solo episode, and then we talked about it when you were with Cat Rich. Just, you know, just what a gut punch. And you guys had such a schedule set, so much work ahead of you that had to be postponed or canceled or whatever. So it's good to hear you guys that you're gigging.
Yeah.
When was the last time you gigged?
I think I'm allowed to say this. I did do a gig in November. We did a wedding in November. That was sanctioned. It was a fully sanctioned event. We weren't like going in disguise or whatever. But and it was good. It was fine. But it was kind of, everyone was super cagey and nobody knew what to do and nobody knew to dance or whatever. So I played in November. I think it was like the second week in November, and I literally have not performed. Before that, it was the summertime.
Wow.
A few gigs in like Forked River in the summertime, but. I've done three gigs in the last year. Yeah,
it's crazy, man. You got me beat January 2020. So I think it was with you. We were in Asbury Park.
I did the last gig that you did. I did, yeah. Yep. So now I have a frame of reference, a measurement for you. But it's, you know, and it's weird because, like, again, I hate to be negative, but again, it's just like, you're kind of thinking, you go through life as a musician, and I'm kind of semi-pro, I guess, but you kind of go, all right, what's the next way that musicians are going to get fucked? It's like, really, one of the things that I noticed is at every turn, it was almost like this was the anti-musician virus, because no gigs, boom, that was done. Everyone started going on Facebook, and Facebook actually became cool because there was so much art on Facebook. Boom, Facebook shuts you down. And then one thing after another. And, you know, it's, you know, musicians get a bum rap at the best of time with all the, you know, streaming royalty or lack thereof. And all the legwork you got to do to be an artist. And then this came along, and it was just like, man, it's like 1, 2, 3, 4, boom, you're on the ropes, and then you're down. It's crazy. But I think it's starting to come around now. And I'm starting to get text messages from people I'm playing with going, okay, we've got to learn this song. And like, looking at my bass going,
how do you hold this thing?
Exactly. What do I do with this again? Do I swing it over my head, or do I go for the green over with this?
Do I have to play with a pick?
Do I play with a pick? Do I play it upside down? Do I hit it?
These strings are thick.
Right? Know? It's almost like I should be building a bridge with these things or something. Right?
It's so much negative, you know, but at the other end of it is, in my experience with it, I haven't had the virus.
Yeah.
I don't think members of my family had the virus. You know, not many of my friends have had it, and those who have been fine. They got over it fine. So I haven't seen tragedy. I've heard plenty of tragedy, though. Those are the things that undeniably sad, and it's a bummer. In my own experience, though, you know, all I really could say is things are clearer now. I've been able to make like solid changes to my life and to how my life is structured, what my goals are. You know what I mean? So it's weird to say, but you know, it's good to know that when shit hits the proverbial fan, that, you know, I'm not going to be covered in shit. I know how to like fucking, you know, I guess pivot, you know what I mean? And endure. And change for the better.
And the good thing that we're taking from this now is, like, you're not just talking about your garden variety turd. You're talking about that Triceratops Jurassic Park turd. This was the ultimate.
Yeah.
Like, hitting the ultimate fan. It was
this
crazy.
Is a, like, King Kong or Godzilla. Like, wait, what the fuck? Not planes flying into buildings. Fucking giant gorillas, like, tearing down buildings. That it's kind of like that thing. Like, how are we supposed to fucking prepare for the, you know what I mean, kind of thing? Like,
I watched that movie the other day, and I'm like, I feel like the spectacle's gone, because we're like, I mean, before that, like, the second movie, King of the Monsters or whatever, you're like, bro, this is an incredible spectacle. And now we're like, we've lived through the coronavirus. What's a monkey and a lizard going to do? I mean, it's just, you know.
I think if I see the big fucking lizard and the gorilla, I think I know my fate, right? Yeah. But there's something about this virus I can't see.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, that scares me more.
Yeah.
And you know what I mean?
And I think the reaction in the next movie, it's going to be a very short movie, and it's going to be like a kaiju coming out of the Pacific Ocean, and then just a bunch of people going, oh, well, I guess I'm working from home for the next one. I better reopen my Zoom account.
It's just going to be scenes of people stocking up on toilet paper.
Yeah. Yeah, and soup, cans of soup, and getting sternos and everything. Oh, yeah. God. Well, maybe it was some sort of like doomsday prep we were doing for the last year, but it's good. We're coming out of it. I'm starting to talk about projects again, and you know, think about things happening. And you know, I know that everyone was like, it was like the big inhale or the big deep breath or whatever, but the last couple of months I'm starting to hear my music colleagues and people talking about projects and gigging and stuff, and it just feels like I've just woken up from a bad dream and I'm starting to talk about music again, which is great.
With that said, you know, I've had this conversation. I remember somebody used the word saturation or saturated, right? And, you know, you think about online content, right? Or no, actually, we were really talking about the amount of bands and artists that are out there. And yeah, you know, it kind of gets saturated. What sticks out? What actually is different? You know what I mean? You know, it's almost like, I'm not saying this has changed much.
Sure.
But I think that there are less people doing it. Because it's not easier to do, and you can't perform. So the people who really want it are going to do it.
Yeah.
But what I mean is somebody, you know, we've seen them, dude. How many have we seen them? They just fulfill that pop star look, and they just write some bullshit songs. Yeah. And maybe they get somebody to produce it for them, whatever. They even have like a fucking music video. They just fill that role, and they're just another person, and they're not really offering anything. They're not contributing anything to music as an art form, and not really contributing anything to, the common folk. You're just another pop star, and
you're so right. And one of the things that I enjoyed about seeing people, get their art across, especially music, via a kind of spit and sawdust stripped down. You're sitting in a room with like an instrument. Is you found out exactly who the musicians are. Like none of the people that you would completely expect to like not be able to interpret their music in that media came out with anything. It was all the real musicians were playing, and that's not to say no pop stars. I mean, I was keeping up with a lot of the European and UK guys, and like, you know, Gary Barlow from Take That just did like a weekly concert via Zoom with, and he would have a guest every week. And it just kind of made you think, wow, that guy is actually a killer musician and a killer singer. Mm-hmm. And, you know, who I haven't seen in a year, Justin Bieber. I haven't seen Jason Derulo in a year. I haven't seen... You know, I haven't seen any of those guys in a year because they, you know, as they have a shtick, but it's all wrapped up in like this artificial kind of, it's all visual and it's got to be supported by this
spectacle.
Whereas if you can like get somebody in a, you know, 6x6 inch box on your TV screen or your computer screen and they can entertain you, I think it went back to that old style, just, you know, one man band, entertaining thing. It was really cool. It was one of the positive things that came out of it. Like really was, you know.
There are so many little pockets too. So your pocket of who you follow on social media and keep tabs on musician wise, artist wise, is different than mine. Mm-hmm. And what I've witnessed, and I think this show is a great example of it, is when the fuck do musicians, and I'm going to say get together, but meaning like schedule time to talk.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like have a conversation. You know what I mean?
Like, I mean,
think about.
Yeah. I think a lot of the time, the only conversations that musicians have with each other are like so, you know, homogenous. So, you know, just based around the art of music, and either you're getting ready for a gig or you're writing a song or you're recording a song or you're rehearsing a song. And one of the things that, you know, other art forms do more than musicians do, I think, is talk about the art and talk about the industry in a way that's purely for conversation's sake and not with any goal intended, you know? So I heard a lot of that. I heard a lot of the people that I respected, you know, talking about their music more, talking about other people's music more.
Yeah.
And we became fans of more things, I think, which is, that's only good for any industry. And, you know, it's been real. It's been weird, but
yeah,
onwards and upwards, mate.
I'm just glad. I'm glad people are talking. I'm glad that, like, you'll see, like, jazz greats, man, having conversations on, like, a Zoom call just like this. Yeah. And it's out there for people to see. And, you know, I mean, you really think about it. Mm-hmm. You know, there was no Inside the Actor Studio for musicians, really. Not much of it is what I mean. So, you know, I do think it's weird. It's like the expectations for a performer, musician, you should be able to match pitch, like things like that, right? You should be able to engage a crowd as a singer. Mm-hmm. You know, you should be able to learn a song within minutes, like things like that. Well, now you should be able to talk about your art.
Yeah, you have to be able to deliver your art without the aid of the instruments you play or singing or whatever. You need to be able to, and it's been really good because I've learned a lot more about my favorite musicians. You know, mm-hmm. I learned a lot more about even musicians that I didn't necessarily like beforehand. Yep. You know, but one of the greatest things that's happened, it's actually quite topical for what we're doing here, is some of the biggest musicians in the world ended up going on podcasts that they wouldn't necessarily have gone on before because they were touring or recording an album. So
exactly,
kind of a few of the guys kind of came down from the mountain.
Yeah,
and that was really cool.
Yeah,
you know, it was really cool. You know, you know, going back to the early days of the whole thing, it was looking at my phone going, wow, Dave Grohl is in a pandemic too. He can't leave his house either. You know, so a lot of these guys, I mean, Grohl would be a bad example because he's comes across as such a down to earth guy, but some guys came down from the mountain and they were like, we're all doing this crazy thing. But you know,
I'm telling you though, man, the one thing though, because you could say there's even more saturation in a certain regard.
Right.
But like you said before, the true musicians, the real ones, the ones who really love it, the ones who are doing it because they just love to do it. They love to you get caught up in writing a song, or even part of writing a song. You just believe in. You're just following this trail of inspiration.
Yeah.
And you want to actually. It's also almost like. It's like you're almost like an archaeologist, mm-hmm. and the song already exists.
Yeah,
and you're working really hard to just get the fuck, just dig it and see the whole thing, see the whole picture.
Sure,
you know, yeah. But the only difference is your imagination is what will change what that picture looks like.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and you know, and so that process, like I would say. I would say that there are probably more people. I would say that this thing was like, okay, well, I can't fucking go on stage, right? And I can't engage an audience. So I'm here. Mm-hmm. I have my instruments. I would say that those moments with your instrument in writing probably happen more than ever before. And that's what I want. Even if it's like music I don't like,
mm-hmm.
I'd rather it be genuine, coming from somebody who's like,
that's exactly what I was just saying, man, about the guy from Take That, not my favorite guy,
yeah,
artist in the world, but like a really, like, and I don't think I would ever have found that window into that, you know, into his talent. And the other thing as well though is you know, it was a weird mix of, yes, a lot of writing went on. I actually learned that I'm, you know, more excited about managing a project than I am about writing for it in this.
Oh, really?
But the reason that is because one of the stumbling blocks I've found is I need that external inspiration. You know, there's some guys that write and they just have it inside them.
Yeah.
And they can conjure up these memories from, you know, so many years ago or whatever and write about it. I need stuff to be happening in my life. I need to be traveling, or I need to, you know, stuff needs to be happening in the world. And I mean, stuff's been happening in the world, but nobody wants to write a song about the DC riots. You know what I mean?
No.
It's, you know, and you know, conversely, I'm also not really looking forward to all the, you know, albums that are going to be called things like, you know, Leaving My House or Opening the Door. Or, like, there's going to be, there's, like you're talking about saturation. I think there's going to be saturation of, like, you know, even, I hate to say it, but even my favorite band in the world, Crowded House, they, their new single is, it's just so, it's a little bit too kind of on the nose pandemic. It's something like Something About an Island or Come to the Island Where It's Quiet or something like that.
Oh.
And obviously the leader of the band is from New Zealand, and it was one of the first places that, and I'm listening to the song and I'm going, is he kind of going, nah, we cured the virus before you guys. But, I mean, it's a beautiful song, but I was kind of like, I hope that there's not this, I hope we just get on with it and there's not this huge, oh, I'm going to write an album about being in solitude. And, you know, I really, that's not what I want to hear. What I would like people to do is start to write songs about the joy of being with people again and the joy of being, you know, of energy again, you know,
that would
be really cool. I'm kind of just putting this in the rear view mirror, you know, in 10 years.
But that's exactly what you said. Like, it's not, don't make it about the pandemic, make it about you, make it about how it changed you, but you don't have to reference it. You know what I mean?
I don't want to be hit over the head with the coronavirus stick for the next 10 years.
Yes.
It's just kind of, I hope people start writing songs about, you know, the only reference to it is how different it is now than it was, you know, when we were kind of in the depths of it. But
one other thing though, that I hope, man, one other thing that I hope that when there are performances again, and the people who pick who's going to perform on their stage at their venue, I hope they actually consider what they want to listen to. You know, what truly sounds valuable and good. I hope the same with crowds.
Mm-hmm.
I hope that people look, if you're listening to this and if you're ever at a show and there's somebody performing and you don't like their music, and in fact, you're just bored, or you're just, I don't think this person's good. Do not clap when they finish their song. Do not clap. By clapping, you are reinforcing that they're doing a good job, and you're reinforcing this, like, stupid expectation of performances that you have to be polite. Fuck that. You're being polite by listening. You do not have to be polite by clapping for them. It's almost like a participation trophy. That doesn't help anybody. That's like fake laughing for a comedian who's not funny.
You would not be popular in Japan.
I wouldn't be popular with a lot of people, dude. I piss a lot of people off, I think.
I've never been overly popular myself, but I imagine it's overrated. I just want to get to that stage where I'm in a room full of people watching a band again. Because the first time you do that, and I know I said I did a few gigs, but when you're doing the gig, you don't really get you're kind of on, it all kind of passes very quickly and you're not really paying that much attention to the gig itself because you're focusing on the music and delivering a show. But sure. I'm really looking forward to like standing in like a venue or a bar or whatever, and there's a band playing and hopefully it's a good band.
Yeah.
And just everybody just thinking about, hoping that everybody is thinking about, fuck, how lucky are we that we get to, you know, we get to experience, like just being in a movie theater again. We'll just like seeing a spectacle of a movie. Like hopefully Baz Luhrmann comes out with a movie soon, because that's exactly what I need in my life. I need planes flying over me and, you know, 3D surround sound and all the rest of it. And just to kind of, and be in that room with 100 other people going, wow, this is something that I just shrugged off like it was going to be, you know? So I don't think anything is going to go back to the way it was. Least of all music. I think music has fundamentally changed. And I think a lot of stuff is going to be left behind. For example, and I think this is a pretty good example of it. For our European friends who maybe don't watch football or even, you know, the guy that did the Super Bowl this year, you know, I thought his performance, what's his name, The Weeknd?
Oh, The Weeknd, yeah.
Absolutely brilliant. But it was brilliant as a performance. But I thought it was equally brilliant as an unexpectedly avant-garde performance for an event that's just been so cheesed up, you know. Like, it got to ultimate cheese level when, you know, Justin Timberlake's playing a Prince song and there's like a hologram of Prince in Minnesota, and I'm like,
oh, that's right, yeah. I gotta be honest, I didn't see The Weeknd's performance. I should probably check it out.
It was like it started off, it was so not like the NFL, and it was so not like a Super Bowl show, but not in the sense of it being socially distanced or anything like that. It was just it was delivered in a very artistic way, that it wasn't, appropriating anything, like sometimes, you know, institutions, and especially in Western countries, can, you know, appropriate certain cultural things, like if Beyonce is performing or if.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
So, I mean,
I know exactly what you're talking about.
You know what I'm talking about. It did none of that. It just was, it was very artistic. It was very well delivered, and it was very understated, you know, super understated. And I thought it was I was thinking, man, is that actually what's going to happen now? Are we going into a future of understated, just pure delivery of art in all its forms, music, film, theater, you know? I don't know what you think about this, Anthony, or are we going to go back to the way it was, where the only people that are making any money are the Rolling Stones, The Who, and whoever is the new pop star at the time, you know?
It is interesting. It is the first time in entertainment history, mm-hmm, that the audience or the viewer had something taken away from them.
Yeah.
And not only them, but the performers had something. So, like, we just went over a year with no Broadway. You know, that to me is unreal. I mean, what a legendary tradition. And you have to think too, if you went a year with no Broadway, you went a year with a lack of greatly reduced tourist, New York City tourist population. So then that's less people that saw the Statue of Liberty and went up to the Empire State Building. And like,
so the Naked Cowboy, all those.
That exactly.
New York.
So when people have shit taken away from them, I guess you, of course you seek it out, but I guess another thing would be, I've just been thinking about this so much. It's like, is the relationship to music the same when you're at a concert versus when you're listening to it in your house? And you can make an argument. I think that there's a duality to that answer. I think yes and no. For me, it's the same in what I value. It's just heightened because it's in front of me.
Yeah.
And getting my rocks off because these people on stage, mm-hmm, are creating magic in front of me, right?
Yeah.
So are people maybe considering what am I gonna, because they've it's not that they didn't have the music to access. They had all the music to access from home, but the show and the experience of that. Mm. And I'm just thinking, is it going to continue to be about a spectacle? Are artists going to be able to, the ones that want to, be more expressive and just put on a damn good live music show? That's it. Nothing more. Are they going to be able to get those opportunities?
I think they will. And, you know, I think appreciation just for the simple things, you know, because we were at fever pitch. It was at boiling point with just the things that people had to do, movies, you know, you look at, Broadway shows, like the things that people had to come up with, like Idina Menzel having to hang from the rafters of a theater delivering a, you know, I don't know what note she was hitting, but there's this song in Wicked where she's like, she's singing the song. It's incredible, incredibly difficult, or it looks incredibly difficult. It is Idina Menzel, so she can do it no problem. But she's also being hoisted up on this like a bungee thing up onto the rafters of the theater, and I'm like, can we stop with that?
I agree with you.
I mean, is it making it any better? Yes, it's incredible that she can do it. Yes, it's incredible that she can do it and maintain pitch and maintain professionalism. But I don't want to be dour about it, because it's not about that. It's not very honest. And I think we're going to get a little bit of honesty back, and we're going to get a little bit of, you know, just honest to goodness performance, you know?
I hope so, man.
I think that's super important.
You know, I fucking hope so.
All these art forms, you know?
Yeah. And I really hope so. We've talked about it with Kat and Rich.
Mm-hmm.
You have my promise. Like the first goddamn performance I put on, I mean, I am bringing it, dude.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the energy has to be high.
Yeah.
You have to smack these people in the face to remind them, this is what you've been deprived of. Right. And
or do you hold back? Do you like phone it in for the first 6 months? That's what I plan on doing.
No.
I'm joking.
I was gonna say, like, no.
I'm just gonna phone it. I'm gonna half ass it.
No, man. I think you gotta remind people, hey, this is happening in front of you.
Yeah.
You hear this magic? This is happening in front of you. There's no fucking, you didn't press play.
Sure.
Yeah, we're doing this.
I think people are going to come out of the gates. They're going to come out swinging, but,
hope so.
Yeah. And I think people will do that in, I don't know how I'm going to approach, like when I eventually get vaccinated and I can eventually go places and do things. I don't know if I'm going to be like a greyhound. I think I'm going to slowly re-acclimatize myself with the world. First thing I'm going to do is go to Ireland and Scotland and see my family.
Yeah.
But I don't know if I'm going to be like, I'd like to slow. One of the things that a lot of people are saying about the last year, which I like what we've done with it, is I'd like to like slow it down a little bit, you know, because I'm appreciating more things.
Sure.
Well, I mean, I'm not taking anything for granted. I could go to the cinema, go to the theater any night.
Any night, yeah.
And even hanging with your friends.
Oh, yeah.
Being able to hang out with people we have to remember that it's a privilege. And
yeah,
hopefully we'll get that back. It'll be nice. It's a good positive.
Well, it's a good, a nice change is just being able to collaborating for me has been
mm-hmm.
a challenge. It's not that I'm not doing any of it. I've done some, but this, you having you now on the show is a fantastic commitment to a collaboration.
Yeah.
We talked about it extensively for the listeners. So Paul's jumping on board because, I mean, Paul and I could fucking, and we have talked for like 6 hours while drinking and just hanging out and, you know, both just the two of us or like, and then with Kat and Rich, you know, so we could talk for hours and we could have good, deep conversations. It's not fuck it. Not just bullshit, but we also will joke around, you know, and it's just the perfect balance.
Yeah.
I think that alone obviously is valuable. A lot of it is music centric, just like we were just talking now. The other portion of this that I'm really excited about is that, you know, you have a whole connection to a whole other bunch of artists that I don't really know. And, mm-hmm. and I'm so excited to, and also we also have people we both know
mm-hmm.
that I haven't reached out to yet. So, and then others that you and I don't know, but we would love to reach out to, it would be really good to have you here because you ask great questions. you're great on the mic, basically. That episode you and I did, when it was just your episode, it was it's probably the top most listened to episode. It's a great, fucking great episode. So to have you as sort of like a teammate on this, you know, I think it's gonna help, because I see it from I've been doing it for 44 episodes, 45, whatever it's been, for a year, and I only see it from my perspective.
Sure. I mean, I've been listening to your episodes going, I would love it if he had asked that question, or I'd love if he had made that comment or whatever.
And, that's right.
You know, I'm very excited to find out what you make of the people that, the guests that I'll be bringing on, and I'll be recommending, and I'll be, you know, getting in touch with for the podcast. But one of the things that I'm really looking forward to is the first time both of us sit down with somebody that neither of us know. But I think we should make fun of people more, definitely. I think that's definitely going to be happening. But maybe it'll be the people we know. But I think we had a conversation a couple of weeks ago about some pretty cool guests that we're going to line up for the show. And I think it'll be a little bit different. I think it will be, but also keeping with the spirit of it's about sitting down with people in the music industry, regardless of whether they're singers or producers or drummers or musicians, or techs, you know. I'd love to talk to more tech people.
I was going to say that too. Yeah.
It would be cool to sit down with some technically minded people, because even though we would be totally geeking out, you know, I think it's valuable. There's a huge, the crazy thing about music is so much, there's so many people go into making of a record or making of a concert or, you know, even making of a gig. And, you know, it's like, I'd love to sit down and like interview somebody that worked at CBGB's.
Oh yeah.
I mean, like just at the barman or something.
Yeah.
How cool of an episode would that be?
Absolutely.
So yeah, there's a lot of cool stuff coming, but I'm happy to be on board. I'm honored to be on board. There's nothing better than becoming part of something that you were a fan of. So I get to see.
Well, that's a fucking great compliment right there, man. Thank you. Yeah, it's been, and yeah, look, it's been, it's one of like the easiest commitment decisions I've ever made. That's creative. Easy decision, easy to stay on top of and to be motivated by. There's so many people to talk to. And then after 40 something people, there's still more people to talk to, and there's still more conversations to have. It actually is such a great, and you're going to find it out. I mean, it's such a great way to make a true like connection. Mm-hmm. It goes beyond networking.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
I mean, it's you're you know, it's like you said earlier on, it's very rare that people in the music industry have such a centralized pointed conversation about what they do.
Yep.
Without literally working together on it. Like, I have spoken to, you know, many drummers and many guitar players and many songwriters about songs that I'm working on with them, but I'm looking forward to sitting down with people and going, all right, I'm not writing a song with you now. I just want to ask you about your process and your inspiration and your, you know, funny things that have happened. And, you know,
so many stories.
I want to hear about their, I mean, we did that with Cat Rich, where we spoke about the worst gigs of our life. I'm excited to hear about, you know, these like elegant singer songwriters that we both know, and hearing about their shitty gigs and in like Reno, Nevada or something.
Yeah, man.
It'll be cool. It'll be fun.
One quick little thought I had the other day. It was about musicians and specifically like songwriting. And it's a weird angle. So if it doesn't click with you, just tell me. I don't know what the fuck you're talking about. It was sort of like it was sort of like it's sort of like the notes already exist. The chord progression, melody already exists. We think we create it, right?
Sure.
But it exists already. The pattern exists already. Mm-hmm. It's just that pattern, we whatever reason stimulates us and whatever emotion we're feeling. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that makes sense, but
yeah. Oh, I mean,
it's like the color purple already exists, right?
Sure.
But I just mix red and blue.
Well, the interesting thing about writing songs and writing music and working collaboratively with musicians is whenever you come up with an idea, there is this, when it's a good idea, there is this sense of familiarity about it. And that's when you know it's a good idea, because you're like, you almost think like you've heard it before, but you haven't. And it's, you know, that's kind of cool. That's, I know exactly what you mean. It's like you're not necessarily, you know, birthing something as opposed to just picking it out of a kind of, you know, it's like a kind of ethereal sushi restaurant of music, and you're just picking things out of it. And I think that's what it feels like especially when I'm writing, and I write mostly in a collaborative way. I've written very few songs start to finish just myself.
Yeah. And I think I'm similar, man.
Yeah. Yeah. Very little has been like, oh, I wrote all of that and all of that was me. But even when I'm writing and I'm sitting down with guys and we're all like, you know, I come up with an idea and I add something to a song or a part or a line or a change in the structure of the song. And when it triggers something in people, it feels familiar, feels almost like deja vu, you know, or a glitch in the matrix or something like that. It's very familiar. So I completely understand what you're saying. I get it completely. From a writing point of view, I get it.
You know, it's another thought that actually gives me a lot of warmth is think about how many songs that exist and they're recorded, right? Or maybe not recorded, but whatever. Doesn't matter. They're written songs.
Yeah.
And they're from artists you've never heard of. Mm-hmm. It could be from 50 years ago, 60 years ago, even like 5 years ago. You and I have never heard these songs. We never heard of these artists. They could be fucking beautiful songs. Could be beautiful music, and we may never hear it, right? And you know, there's billions of people on the earth. That's going to continue to happen. Mm-hmm. There will always, on the day that we go, okay, today is officially the day I say music is the shittiest it's ever been, on that day, it probably will be more likely that there will be amazing music. Mm-hmm. Still, just sheer fact of, man, it's just connectivity. Because,
yeah,
you know what I mean.
I understand exactly what you mean, but I think as as responsible listeners of music, and this goes for any art form, I think it's incumbent on the audience is just as important in art as the artist. So I think we need to be more. I know I need to be more like this. Audiences tend to be like, when you hear the word audience, you think about, I'm sitting down in a seat and I'm in the dark and there's somebody up there with a light on them and they're singing. And that what I do is I show up and they sing to me. But I think what we need to picture in our minds when we think about an audience is we need to think like fucking Lara Croft or Indiana Jones. You need to explore, and it needs to be something that you're like an archaeologist with. You need to go out and discover artists.
I agree with that.
It's only something that I've, only because I've been given the tools to do it, you know, have I done it. I don't go down YouTube rabbit holes. I go down Spotify rabbit holes and music rabbit holes. And, you know, one of the, speaking of rabbits, one of the bands that I've been introduced to recently, which is something that's being used sort of as songwriting inspiration for a project that I've got upcoming, is a Scottish band called Frightened Rabbit. And I mean, anybody listening to this podcast, I mean, it's a band that you have to listen to. They're defunct. They're no longer in existence because the machine behind the band, the songwriter, sadly committed suicide a few years ago. And he was had serious mental health issues, and he didn't make it. But man, did he leave behind some art, like, you know. And it's just like you said, it's beautiful, but you have to go out there and look for it, you know.
Yeah,
having your favorite artists on your playlist, whatever, that's great. And, you know, we work out to this music and we eat with this music and we, you know, we're romantic with this music and we play tennis to this music. But then you got to set aside a portion of your week to just go, okay, I'm not going to, for the next 2 hours, I'm not going to listen to a single song that I've heard before. And you'll be amazed what's out there, man. It's, you know, it's stunning.
I think that's great. That's great. A great idea. Cause my problem is that I listen to albums. I'm always looking for albums. So do you know how many artists have amazing songs, but the song that album's on, is the albums I don't really like at all. So I can't listen through the album, I'm probably not going to listen to that song. I'm just not going to go out of my way to make a playlist, you know?
Do you feel like this is a question that I've always wondered about and always wanted to ask other, not even musicians, just fans of music. Do you feel like there's been a shift in recent years away from narrative in albums, like connectivity between songs on records, or do you think it's still there? Because obviously we live in a very kind of song singular driven culture. Do you think there's a lot of connective tissue between songs on records now, or do you think, like, why do you listen to albums? Is it because you feel the connective tissue, or is it just because you want to consume the entire body of work as it was intended to be consumed?
It's a little bit of both, because I'll say that there are a handful, probably more than a handful of songs that I do lyrically connect to, because they just stimulate something emotional. I would say, though, for the most part, it's just a sound, man, a vibe. And when I listen to that first song on the album, and there's a vibe, I'm like, ooh, I like this. Next song comes on, like, oh, man, I like that. And then song after song after song, by the end of it, I'm like, that was sexy. I mean, just the whole thing. It was like a 8-course meal or whatever. Mm-hmm. Now that is mine now.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, that album is mine now. It's one of my favorites now, forever. And there have been multiple artists over the last few years that have given me that. They've given me multiple albums like that.
Yeah.
If the songs are connected as far as the content and what they're about, I wouldn't know, because I'm not really listening for that, but I definitely am. I look at it as, and this is what's cool about musicians talking, because you get to understand a little bit more. Mm-hmm. I heard a drummer from Mute Math say, he said something about, I love when he played in Mute Math, and when Mute Math was writing songs and recording, he says, we specifically wrote and we believed that time constraint was the best tool. Because he said, he's like, this is a recording, a record of now.
Yeah.
And at that moment in time, we had a fire. There were songs that just highlighted this fire that we had as a band. And those songs needed to be recorded at that moment in time. The only way to do that was, okay, here's our window. Let's finish writing the songs and get them recorded.
Yeah.
So I do like the idea that, because it also makes sense that after that album comes out, that band's going to tour with those songs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's kind of, that's how I look at it. I, you know.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's a functionality to you know, having a finite amount of time to do a record, of course, but for various different reasons, but that, the one that the Mute Math guy, just that one that you just conveyed, is a very interesting one, because you always, one of the things that I always find when I'm listening to a record is I always try to imagine, especially if it's a band, you know, a famous band like Queen or Muse or Radiohead, I always try to imagine, hey, I wonder if the band were like getting on really well at this time, or I wonder, was this born out of conflict, or was this born out of, everyone was having children, so they started writing songs about, having families or whatever. And I think that's a really, I think what you're basically saying, or what I interpreted he's saying is, each album is like an era.
Yeah.
It's like an era. It's like an age.
Yeah.
You have to capture the atmosphere of that era,
mm-hmm.
right then.
Yep.
Without
a doubt.
And I think that's, I remember saying in the podcast that we did originally that when I'm recording or I'm working with a band and writing songs, if you don't get it quickly, just move on.
Yeah.
Because it's hard to capture it at that time, at that kind of, when the, like you said, when the fire is burning,
Yeah.
Otherwise it just becomes contrived, and you can hear contrived music all over the place, and it's disappointing. And you can hear contrived music on the same record, three songs down from a classic,
Yeah.
You can hear it, but like one of the bands that I, because I got away from listening to records for the longest time. I kind of fell into I had a habit of just becoming of the time, especially, I'm not a very original guy. So, I started listening to like songs, like single songs or kind of like greatest hits albums, as opposed to, because my theory was, well, all the best songs are on this. And I started listening to Queen's albums from start to finish. And I like, you'll go a long way before you find a bigger Queen fan than I am. Like, not only knowing their music, but knowing their history. I tell you anecdotes about Queen. I've read about them. I have books. I have, hundreds of hours of watching videos and interviews and things. And I just find their albums are disjointed.
Okay.
They're so disjointed. Like, they're really? So, the best example that I can give you of a Queen album that's just so unbelievably disjointed is their mid-80s album, which had some huge hits, called The Works. The Works had Radio Gaga and I Want to Break Free. Yeah. Like, two mega hits.
Yeah.
It's just, as an album, it's awful.
Yeah, it's heartbreaking.
It's heartbreaking, and you think, God, if you turn around to somebody and said, hey, you know what? The album that those two songs are on is really bad. I mean, I think the best song that Freddie Mercury ever wrote is It's a Hard Life. It is on that record, and it's still a bad record.
Oh my God. I think there's a Foo Fighter record that's kind of like that.
Yeah.
One by One. Times Like These is on it.
Sure.
Great. I mean, amazing song, right? Yeah. But All My Life. I don't know if the rest of the songs like really do anything for, for your listen through.
Is it because of a lack of narrative? Is it because, we were talking about like somebody that really got it right was, one of the clever things that Peter Gabriel used to do. And I don't know if he came up with it or Daniel Langlois came up with it, but how Peter Gabriel, like all of Peter Gabriel's albums, you can listen to as fully, like I don't listen to Peter Gabriel songs, I listen to Peter Gabriel albums. If I'm going to listen to, Red Rain, I'm listening to the entirety of Soul. I'm not right. stopping till and I'll even sit in the car when I park in the garage and just wait till the album's finished because I have to finish the record. But how he got it to be so, so seamless and feel like a single body of work as opposed to a bunch of individual songs is this. When they finished recording the album and they were doing the running order, they made a tape of the ends of songs and beginnings of songs. So basically they would take like the last 15 seconds of one song and the start of that song. And they would like play the endings of this one and the beginning of this one to see what they sounded like together.
Oh, wow.
And then they would like go, okay, well, that's actually a good kind of transition.
Holy shit.
Which song? So we're going to take the end of this one now. And which song, which beginning of the other song? So basically what they did is how he got his running orders was by puttings of the songs together and feeling what, listening to what sounded right and what felt right. And that's how he got the running order of his records.
That's fucking brilliant.
Brilliant. It's especially brilliant considering how, in the days of vinyl, how tied in you were to how the record had to be formatted.
That's simply right.
As you got away from the, as you got towards the center, or as you got away from the center, I can't remember which it is, you start to lose certain frequencies because you can't put the cut can't go in as deep or whatever. So like just being able to work it so successfully with all these constraints.
Yeah.
That's how he did it. He basically made tapes, and on the tape was just the beginnings and the ends of the songs, and he would listen to them and go, oh, that doesn't sound right going from that to that. And that's how he did it. Super smart, really clever.
Super smart, man.
Yeah. But that's why his records can be so easily listened to as a, you know, as a, I mean, we all know concept albums can be.
Sure.
Well, like we all know if you listen to The Wall, you're going to get an amazing experience listening to it from start to finish.
Sure.
It's a concept album. That's what a concept album is for. But it's just a regular album of songs. Nobody did it better than he did it.
So that this is something you just mentioned, Queen, and now Peter Gabriel, and you've mentioned this to me. Like you've mentioned that those two artists, mm-hmm. like if you really want to, you know, invest in like a really good listen. I know that you said that Queen has, you know, albums that aren't that very good, that really aren't that good, but you also have said that they have masterpieces.
Yeah.
And Peter Gabriel, you've said the same thing. So it's like I'm more inclined from that type of recommendation to, without a doubt, like take a day.
Yeah.
You know, take a hit of something. You know, put the headphones on, you know. Yeah, because
Jersey, it's legal now, so we can say whatever we
want. That is right. That's right. Thank you, Mr. Murphy. yeah, man. I love nothing more than to put on an album, you know, and like spend time with that artist. Yeah. I can't tell you that I like making a playlist of just singles. I can't say that I like it. I really don't.
Yeah.
If I were to do it, it would be like all house songs, all like, you know what I mean? Like, you know what I mean? Then that way it would make more sense. But no, I want to fucking, it's like, oh, you know what it is too? It's almost like I don't want to hear the sound bite from the interview. I want to hear the entire interview.
You want to get the whole picture. And I mean, an easy way into that is something that I've been doing a lot of recently. And it's a room in the house of music that I just was not interested in as a young guy. I've started to listen to a lot of like Broadway soundtracks, like the album versions of Broadway shows. And,
oh wow!
It's a really nice way of getting back into listening to albums fully, because there's usually a narrative going through it.
Sure.
You know, unless it's a really terrible fucking musical. And that's been a really nice, so that's kind of given me the appetite to do that. And then just the other day, I was listening to the latest record, and I can't remember the name of the record for the life of me, and I've been trying to think about it while we've been sitting here talking about it. But the artist's name is Agnes Obo, and she's a Danish dark pop.
That word.
Yeah, Agnes.
Word. Wow, I know that name. I said.
Yeah, she's incredible, but she writes this kind of almost like it's pop, but it's very dark and gothic. But it's got massive classical music. You know, I wouldn't even say undertones. It's like it's smacking you in the face that she's classically trained. But I listened to her new record, start to finish, and it was mesmerizing. You know, just the way that she put the album together, and you know, the way that every song made you feel complimentary, and every song made you feel like you were connected to the listening experience was very, very connective. So, and I can't remember the name of the record, but you should put it. I'll tell you after. Actually,
I have it up in a Google search. I'm going to listen to her soon.
She is incredible, and she's like this tiny Danish woman, and myopia is the name of the record.
Okay.
Myopia, that's it. She brought it out last year, and it was stunning listening to this. It was really stunning. It was just there. And it's one of the very few times recently that I've listened to a album by an artist from start to finish. But that was one of those. I had like 20 minutes left in the record, and I sat in the car.
Yeah.
I didn't go into the house because I was like, no, I'm finishing this now. And it was cool, man. It was great.
Yeah, you got me actually years ago, and I have to check out what this guy's doing.
Yeah.
Currently, but it was about maybe 2017. You mentioned Chris Thiele.
Chris Thiele, yeah.
I checked out his most recent album at that point. I think I told you, I was like, dude, it's beautiful. It's beautiful. There's that like line of, and that ratio of good material and then a good performance. And I'm not saying that the material was simple. It wasn't. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying the musicians were able to take just something, you know, it's no different than a chef, like making the simplest thing taste like you've never thought it could taste.
Yeah.
It was true expression. It was beautiful.
Yeah.
I'm trying, you know, I'm actually, now that I'm talking about it, let me actually look up the name of the album. It was amazing.
Was it the Punch Brothers or was it just Chris Thiele?
It was just Chris Thiele. Because they're good. They're amazing, the Punch Brothers, too. I mean, that's some like really...
Anybody listening to this, whoever, if you haven't heard the Punch Brothers, the name of the genre of music is chamber grass. It's like five guys. Let me see if I can list the instruments. It's been a while since I listened to them. There's Chris Thiele is on mandolin. There's a fiddle player, a banjo player, an acoustic guitar player, and a double bass player. And the noise that these guys make, and when they play, whenever they do a concert, they just do the concert around a single microphone on the stage. They're using, and they come in and out of the microphone, and they just use the acoustics of the instruments, just like, oh, it's unbelievable.
I mean, like to be really fucking gross, that makes me hard.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like that shit, something like that. And I think I don't know if I mentioned this to you before, but there's that a cappella group called the Pentatonics. I don't know if you know about them, right? I saw them in concert. They were amazing. I saw them at the Beacon Theater. Now they had their own mic most of the show, but at the very end, they did a few songs with exactly what you just said, a single mic. Yeah. And the beauty, the perfection in their voice, in their harmonies, it's just I soak all of that up. I think that that's what I live for, that type of like.
I think they're super talented. I've heard a few of their pieces and they're super talented. I just really wish they would do something a little bit edgier with it.
I agree.
What I really want to see, though, when I think about bands like Pentatonics, and this might sound like the plot for a Will Ferrell movie. You know the way that these a cappella bands, they always have one big guy, and he's usually like super tall, and he's got a ponytail and a goatee.
Yeah.
And he's the bass.
Yeah.
I really want to go to a show where there's a Pentatonics-like band and there's a guy like that and he's the highest voice. In the band. You know, where he comes up, he's just like, and you expect him to just come in with this thundering bass and he's like, oh, which is so funny to see that.
And the little
little guy, like, whoa.
The little woman is the bass. That'd be great.
Exactly. Little kind of skinny. Woman is
the name of this Chris Thiele album, by the way, was Thanks for Listening.
Oh, okay.
Amazing.
What's that?
2017. And this guy is he's on fire, dude, because you look at his discography. He's got Thanks for in 1 year, he put out three things. Thanks for Listening was his solo thing. Then he had Bach Trios. So it was just, I guess, maybe it was the Punch Brothers, maybe, I guess. And then he had one with him and if you know the pianist, Brad Mehldau.
Yeah, I think the trio is Chris Thiele. Listen to this. This is the one that I've heard him playing with. Chris Thiele, Yo-Yo Ma, and Edgar Meyer.
Oh, man.
Yeah, that's the trio. And they play bluegrass.
It's amazing. It's
essentially bluegrass music. And there's one piece. There's one piece, and I think it was actually a quartet. There was either a guitar player or a drummer playing with them. And I'll try to find it over the coming days and give it to you. But now, I've got to like, you got to put this type of music in its own parentheses or something, because it is in very indulgent. Like the Punch Brothers is like, don't tune into the Punch Brothers expecting to hear like, I mean, they actually, in one of their albums, they, you know, Who's Feeling Young Now or something, actually has some tunes. But it's very indulgent, but it's so, if you want to hear, if you are the type of person that likes to hear somebody or people playing their instruments at the top of their division, at the top of their league, these guys, anybody that plays with Chris Thiele is
at
the top of their league.
Let me help you with that. Because if what you're talking about is, it really might not have anything to do with like, you're not talking about like Charlie Parker like flying on the saxophone, right? You're not really talking about Rachmaninoff. I think what you mean is, because they do that Radiohead cover. You know what I'm talking about?
Today, yeah, they do a cover of Today.
They do Kid A, right? Yeah.
Yeah, it's
okay. So if anybody is a Radiohead fan, listen to this. And you know the song Kid A off of the album Kid A by Kid A, letter A, by Radiohead. You know the song. You know it's completely electronic. Other than some distorted vocal track from Tom York, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe later on some like, definitely not live drums. He's definitely playing electronic drum set. Whatever. Like early on, I don't know if it's, I honestly think it's all programmed or electronic or something, whatever.
Yeah.
These guys, the Punch Brothers, do the most unique organic cover of it. I mean, it's fucking beautiful, man.
And the guy on the bass,
oh,
the bow is doing the melody.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It sounds, the timbre is perfect. It's
perfect.
In the original, Tom York uses like a vocalizer, a kind of synthesizer on his voice. Yeah. Makes it sound like it's kind of low and woolly.
Yeah.
And the bass, as you're like, you're listening to the bass player doing this, the melody, copying the melody on the bass. And you're like, oh my God, that's it. That's exactly the timbre that you should be using for that. It's very clever.
That's the type of stuff that really also kind of gets me going, which is like, you got a couple people who are saying, hey, this completely outrageous electronic music song. Yeah, we're gonna cover it with our
banjo, yeah,
string instruments. You know what I mean? Like we're gonna do it organically and make it sound. We're gonna work hard to make it sound like that.
Right, the piano at the start, bling bling. That's banjo. Right. That's a guy, and you're like, of course it's banjo. Was it ever played on anything else?
Yeah.
Banjo. It's crazy.
Creative, very creative. To reverse engineer.
Yeah, very creative. Yeah, very creative. And there's like on Who's Feeling Young Now or Who's Feeling Old Now, or what, I can't remember what the name of the album was, but there's that.
Yeah.
The first record had a 20-minute instrumental piece called The Blind Leaving the Blind. And then it made this other record with that, Kid A, a bunch of other really cool instrumentals, and tunes and pop songs. Like, they write great pop songs. There's one. I'm going to have to look this up now because I'm
This is what I don't know about them.
Right.
To be honest. So this is, I'm curious.
The Punch Brothers.
Which album are you thinking of?
It's called Who's Feeling Young Now. And there's a song on it called No Concern of Yours. There's two songs, No Concern of Yours and there's another one that's really good. Clara.
Oh,
so
wow.
No Concern of Yours and Clara. They're like, No Concern of Yours is a kind of more Americana type.
Okay. But
Clara is like a really good acoustic pop tune. It's a really, you know, it's a really good, the subject matter is a little weird because his first couple of albums was entirely written regarding his wife leaving him. So it's all very, you know, very kind of dour and not very optimistic, but beautiful. So you've got like, most bands can do one or the other. Like they can write,
yeah,
like people talk about Rush. I'm going to say something controversial now.
Go ahead.
If we ever get Jason Gianni on the show, he'll kill me for saying this, but I can appreciate the skill of Rush. Okay? I can appreciate the skill of Rush, the three guys, the fact that three guys could make that noise, just three guys, boggles the mind.
Yeah.
But they have no songs. They just don't have any songs. Like
I know what you mean.
You know, I mean, like I'm talking songs. Like
two. I know what you mean.
These guys, the Punch Brothers, they have Kid A, Bluegrass Kid A, the genius of that, and the ability to write 2.5-3 minute really good pop songs. It's incredible. And
dude, it might be, you know, like we're entering into this new age of, let's just say, music and how we just think about it. Now we have to talk about it. And I think with Rush, you know, versus the Punch Brothers or like a Chris Thiele.
Yeah.
The difference might be, man, like Rush were a bunch of, you know, really talented. Think about like really talented kids who would get together and just do shit that was fun.
Yeah.
And it went no deeper than that. Right. And that's like, to me, it's like no different than a bunch of like skater kids hanging out and trying new tricks. Right.
Sure.
Doing crazy shit, grinding down a rail, stair thing, whatever. But like Punch Brothers and Chris Thiele.
Yeah.
What they're contributing is, no, we're going to get fucking deep in conversation. I'm going to be vulnerable with you. Mm-hmm. I'm going to share something about my life to highlight like why I feel this way about, you know, like they really, it's exposing. It's not meant to, we're not laughing here, you know, like, yeah, we can laugh still, but we have a way more like other dimension to what we're trying to express. That comes through the music. But the subjectivity of music is, I think, ultimately what is in its own way, the art of music. And this is what the artist has to do, is constantly battle, do I care if I'm understood? Do I just express myself for the fuck of expressing myself? Or do I work really goddamn hard to make sure I translate what I'm trying to express in the most genuine way, where it's understandable and it's inviting. It's not, you know what I mean? And I think that's what I think that's what we're talking about.
Yeah. I mean, I think I'm more drawn to more artistic music now. You know, I'm more drawn to, I'm more drawn to the, because there's various different aesthetics to music, and there's different aesthetics to bands. So you have the visual aesthetic to certain bands, and then, you know, kind of more controversial aesthetic, and the bands like Oasis and the Rolling Stones, and, you know, Slipknot and things like very kind of, very provocative. And I was into all those bands at one stage or the other, but now I'm just, you know, speaking of, like, I try to seek out artists like Agnes Obel, like the Punch Brothers, like Chris Thiele, because I am chasing the art from a listener's point of view.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I'm chasing the art from a listener's point of view, and that's what I'm all about, man. Not in a highfalutin, like, you know, I only listen to things that are in, you know, weird times, like 6-7 time signal. That's not I'm talking about is, I only listen to things now that are evocative.
It has to move you, right? You're not looking to just be entertained. Like, there's a reason why people will watch Schindler's List.
Mm-hmm.
Or even, you know what, even a movie like Shawshank Redemption, you know, how much are you being entertained versus how much you're being moved?
Yeah. I mean, and look, we're talking about artists that can do both.
You know? Yeah, man.
I mean, that's why I enjoyed I watched Hamilton when it came out on Disney Plus. And I mean, I sat down to watch Hamilton expecting to be disappointed, simply because it was just the phenomenon around it became more you know, with such a kind of, there's such a zeitgeist to.
And you're seeing it on a screen.
Yeah, and you're seeing it on a screen. So yeah. You're kind of like, but there's such a zeitgeist to it. It's so of, you know, end of Obama, beginning of Trump. It's so kind of fighting back almost.
Sure.
And the, you know, the way that it's written and the way that it's delivered and everything. And it just, it was very, very, it was a very emotional thing for me to watch. And like it actually ignited so many feelings. And I've always had a kind of love-hate relationship with Broadway and musical theater. You know,
same.
One of my pet hates is when people, singers over emote songs.
Yep.
And
yep.
Broadway is, I mean, you're in a theater, you need to reach the people at the back. I get the science. You need to be big and you need to be over the top.
Yep.
But this is the first musical, that I really got, you know, and I'm no hip hop fan. Like, I mean, I like hip hop, but I don't know anything about hip hop. I would not be the person. I do not have a, you know, encyclopedic knowledge of hip hop, but I have never been, I'm not going to say never, I have not been moved by a piece of art, an audio, a musical piece of art, like I've been moved by that.
Really?
Never, not one time. Not one single time have I ever been that moved by a body of musical work. Never.
Really?
It's that, to me, now, it has its detractors, and understandably so, there are moments where it's like, you know, and like, don't even think about trying to watch it as a piece of historical fact or fiction, because it's more fiction than fact, but
sure.
Just the way it's delivered and the way that the writer of the piece and the people who performed it took ownership of something that was so cornered by one particular type of person. And kind of, it's like there's something anarchic about it, and there's something anarchistic or whatever the word is. It's anarchy. It's basically, hey, we all don't belong in the theater. We're taking it over now. You know, it was such a, it was more that than anything else. Now, it was very moving, some parts of it, but I love the fact that it was like, you know, people that were not used to, or not typically used to seeing in theaters en masse, like, you know. It was a very moving thing to see, and a very kind of, finally, I was like, finally, this is, it's like you're trying to play, you know, spot the person that's usually in a Broadway theater show. You know what I mean? It's cool. It was really cool to deliver it that way. Yeah. You know?
Well, now you, and then also Kat and Rich, really said to me, when somebody like you three go, you gotta watch it.
You gotta watch it. Not only do you have to watch it, but you have to listen to the album, because there's a funny anecdote where as soon as a musical goes on Broadway and becomes a hit, they go in and they record a album of the show.
Yep.
And they were mixing it, and Questlove was in the studio with Lin-Manuel Miranda, and he was getting frustrated because Lin-Manuel Miranda was, because he was like, it just sounds like I don't want it to sound like a Broadway album. I want it to sound.
Yeah.
Questlove just said, just turn the drums up. The drums are so loud and it's perfect, and it's exactly what it should be. And they just went, boom, turned the drums up, and it sounded like a hip hop record. It sounded
man.
You know, it was, you know, and that's, I love that. I love going, we're just going to tear this up, and this is how it was so evocative and such a, and that's what I'm seeking out now. That's what I'm looking for. And you know, whenever I'm on a kind of binge of, I'm only going to listen to new artists, and that's what I'm looking for. I'm looking for artists that the only thing I'm looking for is they have to be moved. Either I have to start moving to the music, or feel emotionally moved right away, or else I'm moving out.
I agree with that. That's the best way. That's the best way to go about it these days.
Yeah.
I mean, because there's 100 shows that are legitimately good shows that you could watch now.
Yeah.
I think music should be exactly the same.
Yeah.
you know, and so that's just challenge. Hey, just challenging artists, or, yeah. How about this? Challenging performers to be artists.
Yeah,
or, you know, and entertainers too.
Yeah, I agree with that, but I also like I'm the same with movies. Like I can watch any movie. I mean, I'm one of these guys. I'm really weird with it because I'm not all that bothered about story.
Really?
I mean, you can fill a movie full of plot holes, as far as I'm concerned. But if it's got Daniel Day-Lewis in it, or if it's got Anthony Hopkins in it,
sure,
I'll watch it.
Sure.
Because I just adore an artist being an artist, you know. Like I watched that the last Daniel Day-Lewis movie, the one before he retired. It's called Phantom Thread. And I know this is a music cast, but I mean we're talking about a piece of art here. And I watched this movie, it was 2 hours long, and I watched it from the start to the very end, and I was like, not entirely sure what that movie was about. But it was brilliant because he was brilliant. Because he was provocative and she was brilliant. You know?
Yeah.
And, you know, the two lead characters were excellent and it was very understated in every single possible way. But it was incredibly moving. Even though if you asked me now to tell you what the plot was, I would not be able to tell you. I don't even know where it started, where it began. But it was one of the most beautiful films that I've ever seen. And that's what draws me to art now, is great performances. You know?
Well, you know what? Now you got me thinking, and how about this? Maybe for maybe the next episode or a future episode, we'll revisit this topic. But specifically, I will have watched Hamilton, right? And I have, if you actually, before I even say that, have you seen on Hulu, there's a show called, and not a show, episodic. It's like a stage show, and it's called In and Of Itself. Have you seen this?
I've not.
So exactly for what you're talking about, you got to watch it. And mm-hmm. I can't give anything away. I can't say anything about it. Just know you have, trust me, it is moving in the best way. You haven't seen anything like it.
Right.
And the guy who is the performer cannot be any more convincing that he's communicating that he's a genuine human being with flaws. I mean, that's all I'm going to say to you. All right. It's on Hulu, In and Of Itself. Watch it. I'll watch Hamilton.
I'm going to need your Hulu password. I don't have Hulu anymore. I used to have it.
Then I'm going to need your Disney Plus password.
I'll get it for you. I'm pirating it myself. So.
Oh my God.
I'll get it for you. But I did have Hulu, and then I finished a couple of shows on Hulu, and I started watching that Handmaid's Tale.
Is that good?
I like what it's about.
Yeah.
Like, I love Elizabeth Moss. I think she's great. And there's another couple of actors in it that I really like. I'm going to say something weird. I don't say this often. There's moments of levity in the TV show that were just off-putting, you know?
Okay.
It felt like it was something that, no, we should just be taking this seriously. And there was like, it was almost like there was this whimsy added to it, which I was like, I'm not sure I'm comfortable with any sort of levity in a show like this. I'm okay with this show being really serious, you know?
Oh, I see. Okay.
It was like when you're watching Mad Men and there's a funny part.
Okay.
And you're like, no. Yeah. No, there's, you know, I don't want funny parts in Mad Men.
Yeah, it would be like The Wire.
It would be like, yeah, it would be like this kind of, you know, on The Wire. You know, this guy's just been like, you know, pumped full of bullet holes and then just like, you know, guy comes in on a unicycle juggling or something. It was weird. It pulled me out of it a lot.
Yeah.
It was like whenever there was humor on Game of Thrones, I mean, it was usually Peter Dinklage, but from like season 3 onwards, whenever there was humor, I was just like, no, just don't try to be funny, guys. Come on. Like, let it be what it is. So The Handmaid's, I'm going to go back to it.
Okay.
It just, I need to, you know, I need to just like start it over. And it was very harrowing and very, very sad.
Wow.
Brilliant. But I just, I was like, I was struggling. I had never seen a show that was paced that way.
Yeah.
It was my shortcoming that it wasn't the show itself. It was my shortcoming. So,
well, I obviously heard things about it. I've never checked it out. I might check it out. I have your recommendation now. One show, by the way, and we can wrap up. And yeah. Listeners, by the way, take the things that we're listening, that we're talking about. I mean, check them out. We're a little bit snobbish, Paul and I, just a little bit.
I mean, I wouldn't say. I mean, I will happily sit down and watch a crappy TV show, but.
You know what I mean? We have our standard.
Yeah, I think we have a standard, which is like you're never going to see me watching
Real Housewives of
I mean, I can't say that I'm immune to the charms of Bravo TV, but I actually, one of the shows on Bravo I watch quite religiously is Below Decks. I think it's brilliant. But what there was one show that I'm like, oh, Cobra Kai. I'm just never gonna watch it.
Yeah, I said the same thing.
And that is as snobby as I get. I don't go down the snob hole any further than that. I'm not going to watch it.
Piss anybody off even more, I've never seen one single Karate Kid movie.
Neither have I. Never seen one.
Yeah. Oh, to piss people off more, I've never seen Rocky, any of them. So.
No. We're going to disagree very strongly. Because, look, here's the thing about Rocky. you have to take it for what it is, but the first Rocky movie is, it's a beautiful, beautiful film.
Hey, man, I know these things because so many people have been like, dude, you got to, and it's kind of like The Godfather. I went too long without seeing The Godfather, any of them. And I eventually was like, okay, I cave, let's watch them. And great. Even Indiana Jones, I went way too long without watching those. Watched them, great. I bet y'all love Rocky 1 at least. And then what is it, up to Rocky? Which one is the bet? Which is one that gets shitty?
Up to Rocky 4. The last good one was Rocky 4.
Okay.
Which is the one with the Russian guy, which was very... And even then, the seeds were sown for like, you know, this is not great. You know, it was starting to become kind of a little bit too star-spangled fabulous for me. But interestingly enough, one of the things that I've always thought about Rocky, just sidebarring Rocky, the Eye of the Tiger, okay? Going back to music. If you, this is something that blew my mind, and I don't know who told me this first, but somebody said to me, try to listen to the Eye of the Tiger outside the context of Rocky, and it is a musical masterpiece.
Oh, yeah.
It's already a great song.
But
if you take it, if you banish the word montage from your mind and listen to the Eye of the Tiger, just as a piece of audio art, it's incredibly artistic and incredibly beautiful. But the only thing I can think of when I hear it is like this, like cheesy, like slow motion, like racing down the beach with a, you know,
there's like there's an element of like, if you can music that can genuinely get your testosterone going.
Yeah, you but know. even without that, you know, because there's a certain amount of masculine myth to Eye of the Tiger. Even banish that. I mean, people listening to this, it's an experiment. Go on whatever streaming service you use, or go on YouTube, bring the song up and listen to the song just as a song without the cheesy connotations of like 80s boxing movies. It's a remarkably beautiful song. It's incredible.
All right. Well, I mean, I it's funny. One of my students was playing it, so we were listening to it. And yeah, just the guitar is amazing.
Yeah.
In it. Yeah. And the voice, the guy's voice is great.
Just the piano chords. Oh.
Yeah.
Big.
You got to watch this show called Dark.
Oh, it's like a European, it's subtitled.
Yeah, it's German.
It's a German, thing. Yeah.
All right, I'm going to say this.
Right.
Probably, as far as like storylines go, character development, all this stuff, probably the best show I've ever seen. Like, I've seen a lot of shows.
Is it subtitled?
It is, but I also, listen, man, I watched the dubbed version of it. It did not bother me. I thought that they did the English dub version. I think they did fine. I think it was fine. It was perfect enough to deliver the story. Dude, you never seen anything like it. The amount of thinking that they take you down as far as the concept, dude, and the perfect amount of like creepy, weird, but also like, I need to know more, you know,
sure.
Perfect. So yeah, anybody listening, Dark on Netflix, go watch it. 3 seasons, wrapped it up nicely.
3 seasons and it's done? See, I like it.
Perfectly wrapped up, by the way. To the point where you can't argue how it ended. You can't be like, I don't like the ending.
Yeah, no. I think more shows need to do that. I'd like to see more seasons, but I think more shows like need to do that. You know, like I've been watching a lot of limited series documentaries and stuff like that, and it's 4 episodes. That's all you need. That's just the right amount of time.
I agree with that. Yeah,
the QAnon one, and I was just about to get tired of QAnon, and it ended, and I'm like, perfect. It's great. You know. Well, Dark. Okay, I'll have to check it out. So it's horror. Yeah. It's like sci-fi.
Well, that's the thing, man. It could admit it. There's some misdirection, without a doubt, in the show. You know what? And I'll say, as far as like vibes go. All right, let's get back to music, and we'll end with this show because the music to this show. Yeah. You know, like it was actually one of the first times where I went. And I was extremely impressed by the composer because it delivered exactly what the show needed. And it went beyond thinking about music. It wasn't about music. It was about narrative. It was about setting. You know, it was about setting up a scene, trying to get you, the viewer, at that moment, at that scene, to feel something that the writer intended you to feel.
Sure.
And the music did a lot. It's almost like Star Wars. If you watch Star Wars without the music, it's ridiculous, right? So it's
ridiculous.
Right? Not to say that this is not nowhere close to Star Wars without the music would be ridiculous.
Yeah. It's
dark, it would work, but the music, it's so well done. I mean, the only complaint I have is just too many white people, but that's fine.
It's Germany after all. It's still Germany, right? It's been a long time. What would you say actually, because just combining the two art forms now, just to wrap up, as regards a TV show, what TV show, in your opinion, name one TV show that had really great music, like really great music, as a linchpin for the show itself.
Mr. Robot.
Brilliant, right?
Amazing.
They did an acoustic, a piano version of "Where Is My Mind" by the Pixies.
Oh yeah.
It's in a very pivotal scene at the end of the first season.
Yeah.
And it put chills down my back.
It was
incredible. It was so incredible.
When you start thinking about content and the logistics behind all that bullshit, you know, when you look at if anybody's to watch, start watching Mr. Robot. Amazing show, right? And you can't really tell. They did such a good job that it was on a network and it was on USA Network. However, I do still think that the fact that it was on a network like USA got in the way of that show. I really do think that.
Yeah, it could have been a bit more controversial if it had been on a streaming service or even AMC or something like that, where you could be a little bit more risque.
Dude, that show came out in 2015, right? Do you know how many goddamn people for years I've been yelling at, like, watch Mr. Robot, or I'll mention it. Have you ever heard of Mr. Nobody knows about it.
It's crazy, right?
It's crazy. It's one of the best shows.
I think after the Queen movie came out, it probably got a little bit of a bump.
Maybe. It's already over by then, though, right?
It's already over, but I think a lot of people went back and discovered it, because it started to be in the collective consciousness a bit more. You know when something's, it's so sad to say this, but I don't know, I hope you agree with this, but you know when something's in the public consciousness simply by the amount of memes that come out of it.
No, it's so true.
A lot of memes, it means it's in the public consciousness.
So true.
So I think just after the Queen movie came out, it was probably a little bit of a bump in curiosity, just because it's so driven by that one actor. It is that one actor. The whole show is that.
Yeah, man.
It just centers around his performance, and it's very, very, yeah, it's very moved. It's actually, I was quite moved by it. I only watched the first season and I was very moved by it.
In a way, you don't have to watch any more. You can argue, like,
there's a bit at the end of it where that's what the rest of the narrative is based around. Yeah.
Yeah.
I would say for me, the TV show with the best music and, like, music holding it down, it would have to be, it's a British TV show, of course, being a European. It was called The Living and the Dead. And I never finished watching the show. It was one season, and it was maybe 13 or 14 episodes. And it was a show about this guy who's living in this house, and the house is ghosts. But it's not a horror. It's just, he's just living with these ghosts. He's having a life with these ghosts. But the music was all, it was a combination between, this is where I discovered Agnes Obel. It was all very kind of Norse, the show wasn't Norse based, but it was all like Norse pop.
Okay.
You know, like Norse, Swedish, Norwegian, Denmark, Icelandic bands.
Oh yeah, yeah, okay.
Music, but
like of Monsters and Men, right?
Yeah, stuff like that, but very moody and gothic and very dark.
Sure.
And then, you know, the other TV show that I love the music for was Vikings. Incredible.
Oh, I've never watched Vikings. Good.
The show's really good. The show's really good for a lot of it. And the last season just kind of... just kind of lost its way a bit. It just kind of wrapped the last season and just finished up. But the music was phenomenal through the whole thing. Again, very, you know, the theme tune is by a band called Fever Ray, and it's very moody.
Okay.
Boom, boom, boom. It's very, very kind of Viking and moody. But
okay.
Similar flavors, but those two shows, if you're listening to music made for TV shows, listen to those two, The Living and the Dead and Vikings.
That's okay.
Really, really good.
Good stuff. To know. Yeah. It makes or breaks a show. I mean, if anything, it's part of the introduction process of you, like, just checking out an episode.
Yeah.
That could hook me.
Yeah.
You know?
I've tried to do it on various. I had opportunities to write music for films. I had two opportunities that I didn't do a good enough job, because you can be a writer and you can be a musician, but then writing to go along with a TV show or a movie, it's hard. It's really hard. All on its own. But I admire those guys for doing it. Bear McCreary and Ramjan Diwali. Bear did Outlander and Black Sails, and Ramjan Diwali does the music for Game of Thrones and Westworld. The music in Westworld is stunning.
I have to watch. I've never even tried Westworld yet.
It's a complete mindfuck of a TV show. But those two guys, they are right now, they're the hot TV show composers, and they're brilliant. Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant.
Actually, you know what, man? I like this topic of just, music composition in entertainment. Mm-hmm. I think we should revisit this even with movies.
Yeah.
You know, our favorites, of course, and you know, diving into the greats, you know.
Well, there's so many great movies about music. I mean, look, today is Max Tanner Day or something like that.
What's that?
It's Rex Tanner. He was like a guy from something to do with Empire Records. I was trying to read up on it today. Oh. Rex Banner. Was it Rex Banner? He was like a something to do. Like the guy was, it was an homage to Kurt Cobain or something like that, but from Empire Records. But that's like, there's so many movies, music movies that are, you know, incredible. One of the ones, I mean, you could dedicate entire episodes to, you know,
Rex Manning,
that's it. Rex Manning. You know, that's a great music movie, Empire Records,
yeah.
High Fidelity, great.
Great
music.
The show's great.
Yeah. They made a show with the Pete Davidson, right? Isn't it?
No. What's her name? Kravitz. Oh, the daughter.
Yeah.
Oh, my. She's so fine in that movie.
Yeah. No, we should take down some. She's so what?
She's so fine in that movie, dude.
Oh, really?
I mean, that show. Sorry, that show.
Yeah, I'm trying to picture her, but I think she might be in a couple of things.
She looks like her mom, you know? You know her mom?
Right?
From the Cosby Show?
Lisa Bond, yeah.
Yeah.
She's married to that guy from Game of Thrones now.
Is she?
She's married to Jason Momoa, Lisa Bond.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
I think that's
well, right. Damn.
Yeah.
My God.
Cougar land right there. She's a seriously beautiful woman, right?
Those family genes, man.
Dude, right? We should do an episode just
that, yeah.
Movie music and composers and TV show music and composers. That'll be really cool.
That'd be great. And I'll see if I can think about, like, actually, it'd be great to get, do you know, did you ever meet, yeah, you had to have met Dan Kobe. From Drina's group, the guitarist, tall guy.
I mean, we hung out backstage when we did that show with them.
So yeah, you met him, but you probably didn't talk to him much.
Yeah.
So he was on the podcast. He does composition for video games.
Oh man, composition. Dude, Assassin's Creed Black Sails.
Yeah.
It's basically they made two records. They made two albums. One is the music, not Black Sails, Black Flag.
Black Flag, yeah, I know what you're talking about. The pirate one, right?
The pirate one. Yeah. Now, I'm not really a big video game guy. I can't claim to be. But so they did two remarkable albums. One is the music from the video game. So like just the music, the theme music and the atmospheric music. And then one of the aspects to the game is you collect sea shanties. And right. They created a record with all the sea shanties, and they are mesmerizing.
Now, what are they? Are they like pirate songs type things?
So a sea shanty, basically a sea shanty, and it's actually weird. It's a very appropriate thing to talk about with a drummer, because a sea shanty is a song that was created. It's a working song, basically. And the sea shanties have various different rhythms depending on what type of rigging you're doing and what type of work you're doing on a boat. So a sea shanty could have a rhythm like a so if you're like pulling the rope, so that would be like a quick one. And then there's like a slow one would be like so the rhythm changes depending on what type of work you're doing. So basically you sing the song that's suited to the work.
Oh, okay. So it's in the motion of
and
pulling something or pushing
open rigging or climbing up like wrapping up a sail a lot of menial tasks in days gone by. Like I was just watching a TV show where they were making tweed and tartan in Scotland. And one of the things that they would have to do, because when the tartan was weaved, it was still weaved very loose. And in order to tighten it up, they would drench the tartan, the wool, and they would pound it. They would basically, so it'd be these women sitting in a circle and they're singing a song in rhythm, pounding the wool.
Wow.
And then it dries out and becomes stronger. And basically the songs change depending on what type of work they needed to do.
So smart.
It's smart, yes, but it's just another element of music in life. Like,
yeah.
Like sea shanties, that type. And sea shanties are a great example because you can almost visualize the type of work that was being done.
Yeah.
Like one of the most famous sea shanties in the world is What Shall We Do With the Drunken Sailor?
Oh, yeah.
So you can imagine them pulling rope. What shall we do with the drunken sailor early in the... That's a sea shanty.
Oh, yeah.
So it's got a very kind of steady rhythm to it, but the rhythm is to make the work easier because it's very difficult work.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
If you're singing while you're doing it with 30 other men or women, it makes the work go quicker.
So. That's a whole other topic right there is different cultures in the world where the music is, yes, absolutely a part of the culture. And there's like a functional reason for the music.
Reason for the music. I mean, yeah, like armies.
Yeah, army. Yep.
Drummers in armies. Drummers were signalers. That's what they were used for, signal.
How about now? You're closer to Scotland than I am, and you know probably know more about it. But is that does that count with bagpipes and
bagpipes were not. Now, don't quote me on this because I might be wrong.
Don't quote them, guys.
I would say that. Yeah, quote me. I would say that bagpipes were usually. It was a dual purpose thing. A bagpipe would, so you'd have the clans would have their own tunes that the bagpipes were playing. It served a dual purpose. It was not only to G up these terrifying Highlanders, but if you can imagine, if you're a British soldier that's been marched up from London into this glen in the freezing cold, and next thing, all you hear in the, you can't see anything. It's misty and it's cloud covered and you can see nothing. And all you hear is the sound of a bagpipe.
Oh,
it is terrifying.
Yeah.
Terrifying because all you're hearing is this droning singular sound. And it's for,
oh my God. For
people like, and it's, it really is in your genes. It's a genetic thing because it is, I've heard from people that are not Scottish or Irish, and they're like, what a god-awful sound. I cannot hear the bagpipes without wanting to fight an English person.
it's
such a stirring sound. But bagpipes were used not for signaling, more as a, to put fear into.
Okay.
You know.
Well, it makes sense. It is one of the most goddamn loudest instruments I've ever heard in my life, honestly. Yeah. Unreal how loud it is.
It's crazy. It's crazy loud and it's crazy. It's a very distinct sound. It's definitely another example of how music was used in a way that was not performance. It was utilitarian. It had a use.
Yes.
You know. In fact,
great topic right there.
Combining all three things just to wrap up.
Yeah.
The opportunity to watch a movie called Zulu.
Oh, I've watched that.
With Michael Caine, isn't it?
The classic, yeah.
Yeah.
That was a good movie.
There's a bit at the end of the movie where they're basically, so the whole premise of the movie is this outpost was defended by the British Army and they were attacked by, were far outnumbered by this enormous Zulu force. Now, I mean, the Zulus were technologically way inferior. They were using shields and spears, and the British had guns. But there's a bit at the end of the movie where it's a standoff. They're basically, the music of the Zulus and so the Zulus start this drumming beat, and then these British soldiers start singing to kind of make themselves to, because they're about to die, basically. They're way outnumbered, they're about to die, and they start singing, and the Zulu warriors are just playing this drum beat, and the music kind of melds together.
Oh, wow.
So you can hear like the British Army are singing this like religious song or something, and the Zulus are playing their drums. And next thing, like, it starts to merge into, and the army stop fighting, and they're just literally, it just becomes like a musical kind of, almost like a fight of music, which turns into just a kind of respect thing, you know. And it's beautiful. Oh, wow. beautifully done in the movie, but you should definitely watch it. It's incredibly done. Yeah, it's really well done.
You know what? I actually don't remember that scene, so I probably never finished the movie.
Yeah, it's like they're just about to die. They're just about to be overrun, and they're just singing at these Zulus, and the Zulus are just like, wow, these are some brave guys, you know. Like,
wow.
I mean, it's very Hollywood. It's very kind
of,
you know.
It is a cool movie, though, because you do root for the underdog, of course.
It's one of the very few times where you root for the Redcoats in anything.
I don't know, man. I remember most of the movie going, take that, you fucking British scum. I remember, like...
Yeah, I mean, at the start of the movie, you're like, I hope these guys get the stuffing knocked out of them. But then you're like... And it's based on a true story. Now, it's not Zulu Dawn. Zulu Dawn is a different movie. It's called Zulu. Zulu Dawn was not as good. More historically accurate, but not as good. But Zulu is a great movie. And Zulu is another movie where music was so important in the movie. The tension and everything was great.
Yep.
Really cool.
Classic movie. Yeah.
And Michael Caine in it. I mean,
Michael Caine.
Michael Caine from London. I do it terrible. My Michael Caine is the worst.
I have to work on it too. Yeah, it's so distinct.
So bad.
It's so bad. To end on this, piss people off even more, I've never watched Braveheart. So take that. I have to watch that too. Or yeah. Maybe I'll never watch it. And, you know.
They just don't watch it.
Yeah. Think yeah. So? Just keep going?
I mean, definitely don't watch it as a piece of history. It's nonsense altogether.
Yeah, but it's epic, right? Apparently,
it's epic. I mean, it's very moving, you know. But it's like, I mean, I've gotten to the stage where I'm like, I watched Braveheart a long time ago, and Braveheart was actually made in Ireland.
Oh wow!
It was shot in Ireland. It wasn't shot in Scotland. But so it's all Ireland that you're seeing, but it's beautiful. And it's well made, and it's very cinematic, and he's very good.
Mm-hmm.
He's very intense, you know what I mean? But it annoys me that why does it have to be that inaccurate?
Oh, okay, got you.
A lot of these histories of these countries are mesmerizing, you know. I mean, one of the ones that's the most accurate, if you want to watch a movie for historical accuracy, but only from a combat perspective, and I'm slightly biased because my brother's in it, but it's a movie called Alexander. They get the combat right.
I saw that.
I don't know how much else they got right, but in Braveheart, they got everything wrong. Everything is wrong, wrong, wrong. The clothing is wrong, you know. They keep dressing these medieval Scottish soldiers, they keep dressing them in rags, and they wore armor. Like, they didn't run against an armored knight with like a t-shirt on. They had armor. You know, it was a very rich culture of that, you know.
I don't know. And that's such a 90s movie. You know, there's a period in time in film and television, mainly film, where they just, you could tell, they stopped ignoring the accuracies of certain things.
I think because there's so much more information out there now.
Yep. And more people to complain about it and to actually have a way of complaining, you know.
It's true. So. Yeah. Everyone's got a megaphone now. So.
But yeah, man.
Yeah. Cool.
Well, first episode on with this is the new Badum Biz.
Yeah.
So thanks, Paul. Good to have you.
Yeah, man. Good to be back. Good. Looking forward to getting some guests on with you and making people wish they had never heard of Badum Biz when they don't want us guests. We need to give these musicians a much harder time. That's what we need to do.
You know what's funny? You know what our goal should be? To either make somebody go, I actually like Paul better.
I don't think
or just give me Anthony by himself.
Let's just go back to the way it was.
There's going to be a split crowd, you know?
I want to say within 10 episodes, people are going to be like, can we just go back? Can we just get the Irish guy off the podcast? Hopefully not.
Give him his own show. No, this is going to be great. I can't wait. And we're going to probably within a few weeks, we'll have our first guest on. Actually, it's going to be very special what we got planned, right, with your family.
Yeah. So, yeah, we've got a few, there's a little project in the works that we're going to talk to some people that you've heard of, but not heard from.
Yes. Who I haven't met, and I'm excited to meet.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be fun. So I didn't send you their bios yet, but you'll just be able to tell by their bios what you're in for. They're
awesome.
These are guys that don't take very much seriously, especially when they take the music seriously, which is weird. But things like this, they're so unaccustomed to being serious about anything.
And that's where we come in.
We don't really, it's not about being serious. It's about having a laugh, but learning something and being able to shine a light on an industry that give people an understanding of a process that's take the mystique away a little bit. I'm okay with that.
For sure. Without a doubt. Yeah. I'm looking forward to that episode. Yeah. All right. Paulie, it's been a pleasure. We obviously could keep going. It's really hard to end this conversation.
We were ending the conversation half an hour ago, but that's great. It's been a pleasure, Anthony. Thank you so much.
Of course. All right, listeners, thank you for listening. Badum biz to you.